Podcast Conversa Mais Pública.
Bem-vindos ao Conversa Mais Pública, o podcast da saúde mais pública. Hoje estaremos à conversa com Anna Rosling Runlund e a entrevista decorrerá em inglês. Anna Rosling Runlund tem um mestrado em Sociologia e uma licenciatura em Fotografia. Em 2005, cofundou a Fundação Gapminder, cujo objetivo é combater a falta de conhecimento com uma visão do mundo baseada em factos que todos possam compreender. Anna também fundou a Dollar Street, uma base de dados que retrata casas em todo o mundo, distribuídas por rendimento familiar. É coautora do best-seller Factfulness, juntamente com Hans e Ola Rosling. Atualmente, Anna ocupa o cargo de vice-presidente e diretora de design e experiência do utilizador da Fundação Gapminder. Hello, Hannah. Welcome to our podcast. Hannah, you have been involved in the creation of some really interesting projects, and we would like to learn more about them. The book Factfulness, which you have co-authored, was a bestseller, having been translated in over 35 different languages. How did the book brought you to a public health conference today and to become a speaker in so many different events?
Yeah, on that I probably have to say, I don't know, but the whole work started by me and my husband collaborating with my father-in-law, and he was a professor in global health. And he basically, what we have tried to do is, I would say, practically try to solve and overcome problems that he faced being a teacher in the global health community, and his frustrations we have tried to sort of work on. So in that sense, I would guess that hopefully we did a few things that were in the area that, yeah, that made it meaningful for other people. I think we were a little bit surprised that the book got so widespread even into other areas.
Another one of your projects is Dollar Street, in which images are used to show us how a certain income is translated in terms of everyday life. You photographed front doors, beds, and even hands. Why did you choose this way to present that?
I think it was a combination of two things. We had, before we started with Dollar Street, we had been working with visualizing statistics, more like, you could say, neutral visualizations with the bar charts and bubbles moving and stuff like that. But we felt, or I felt, because I was studying to become a photographer at that time, and I think I realized that I have a hard time understanding what these numbers that we are visualizing, what they would really mean in everyday life for people. So I think that was how the idea came about, that it would be interesting to know what life actually looks like on different income levels. And also that I was a bit frustrated that people who are tend to be interested in other places, I think very often seem to, in my opinion at that point, overestimate the cultural differences. And I wanted to see if we were collecting homes from all over to see if the cultural differences would be that big, or that I believed that most likely we tend to, I mean, all of us have the same certain needs. We need to sleep, we need to eat, we need to fix the hygiene in different ways, you know, and spend quality times with family and friends. And that is something universal. And we'll try to solve those practical problems of our everyday life in similar ways when we're on the same income level. So I wanted to collect a lot of photos and see if that was true. And I wanted to be able to sneak peek into homes and look at the items, because I thought if you can do that and see, for instance, toilets or toothbrushes or spoons on different incomes, maybe it's easier to relate to what that income level means if you don't have a full family in front of the spoon, right? Because when you see people in other cultures, there's a risk that the cultural differences would be so visually obvious, right? Because you might have a different skin color or a different type of plants. But if you go into detail and look at the spoon itself or at the toothbrush itself, you will see that it's pretty similar. So try to sort of walk around the humans and place yourself in the home, was the idea.
And what skills do you find necessary in order to better communicate data, particularly in the health field?
I think the big challenge is that people are not very interested in data. So I think the important thing is to take out very little data and try to present that visually clear. So basically, rather present fewer numbers and make them easy to understand. We usually try to use the material we develop in like middle school. If the middle school students understand, we usually joke about, then even presidents might be able to understand. Not that they are stupid, but for the presidents, they have so short attention span, right? Because they have so much on their plate. So we have to keep it very, very simple. And I think that is maybe a key, that when people get high education degrees, they start understanding complicated ways of measuring things, and then they might accidentally communicate in a complex way. And then you lose a lot of people along the way. So simplicity, do it so kids can understand.
So Hannah, you have a very optimistic way of presenting data. How do you respond to criticism such as beautifying data or cherry picking?
How do I respond to that? I mean, that will always be an important case, right? Because if people have unlimited time and unlimited span of interest, then you can show everything. But people don't. So you will always have to select something. I would say we try to compensate for that, the cherry picking thing, by actually testing big scale what people are wrong about. And then we try to focus on the areas we have found where people seem to be wrong. And we have tried to test in many different topics and outside our own expertise as well, just to figure out where do people seem to have biggest misconceptions. So we try to be somewhat professional, trying to find what people are wrong about, and then we try to focus in those areas. So that way we try to stay away from being too selective in the cherry picking, so to say. And also in the tools we have developed, like the bubble charts and so on, the whole idea is to combine a lot of data from different fields so that you yourself can select the data you're interested in, but you can see it in the range of other data, and you can change the indicators a bit seamlessly. So we hope that people can, for themselves, do those kinds of activities to stay away from the, you know, cherry picking piece. We want to show the overall picture.
How can we as public health residents help people get a clearer and more realistic view of the overall health of populations?
It's a tricky one, because on one hand, you can do the perfect communication, but still, if the audience is not interested, then it's always hard to reach their brain and to create change. But I do think it's about being where people are and listening to them and realizing how they would enjoy the information to be made, I think. So trying to do it together with the audience that you want to change, I think, is important.
What's the future of the Gapminder Foundation, and do you have any new projects that you could share with us?
So, I mean, basically, we are continuing the work we have been doing. From the beginning, we have tried to make the world easier to understand, see the big global trends and proportions, but we have changed methods a little bit along the way. Now we have been doing this extensive testing of people's knowledge, where we have tested like 9,000 different fact questions on audiences in many countries, in many different topics, to see what people seem to be most wrong about. So you could say now we are about to sum up that experience, and I wouldn't say finalize, but at least summarize and leave that a little bit behind. And we're now more moving into creating online courses, you could say. So we're going to take the highlights from our findings and weave that into learning experiences. We're going to have like online video teaching, and then some portions that will be where you can test yourself and, you know, sort of. So we thought we would be ready with that project now, not with all the courses, but with the flow. But we have been doing two tests, and we were not really happy with the flow we had decided on. So we're now sort of redoing it. So the first course we are working on is we're trying to summarize the content of the SDGs, you know, the goals. And we try to do that in a course that is 30 minutes long for 17 goals, which is a bit intense. So we're rewriting the script at the moment and trying to get the overall view together. So that is what we're working on now. So that will be the starting point of these courses. And then we will see if that flies. And if it doesn't, then we will refine and do some other stuff.
Thank you very much, Anna, for spending some time with us here at the Portuguese National Congress of Public Health Residents. To our audience, we hope this conversation was enlightening. Este podcast encontra-se disponível no website saudemaispublica.com, no Spotify e no Anchor. Se gostaram do podcast, sigam as novidades no nosso site, onde podem subscrever à nossa newsletter. Se tiverem sugestões para os próximos episódios, podem sempre enviar-nos um e-mail. Obrigada por nos ouvirem e vamos continuar a tornar a saúde mais pública.